Well, it's good to be back with you this weekend. Last weekend, I mentioned that I was going to be leading a group of high school kids to the Steubenville Conference in Springfield, Missouri. So had 50 kids on the bus last weekend, and it was a great conference. And then I went from that conference in Steubenville, I went directly up to Lincoln, Nebraska, and did a 5-day silent retreat up there. So it was a bit of whiplash to go from 3 days of basically a teenage rock concert with strobe lights and drums and loud blaring music to 5 days of complete silence, or almost complete silence. It was a silent retreat. There's like 15 priests on this retreat. And what I've come to find out is that not all priests have the same definition of silence. So I'm not going to name names, but but in the midst of all that, canon law, and it's written into canon law that priests are required to take a 5-day retreat every year. It's in canon law, 5 days. It doesn't necessarily have to be silence, but canon law stipulates that priests take a 5-day retreat, a spiritual retreat. And I mentioned that at the last Mass, and afterwards some parents came up to me and said, "Father, could you petition to have a canon law so that parents have to do a 5-day retreat too?" Like, I'd love 5 days away from my kids. but that's currently not the law, so, okay. It's not stopping you. You can still do it, but it's not canon law. All right. But what I wanted to share with you, though, is maybe the fruit of that prayer over the course of this last week. And this homily is a little bit different than maybe my typical homily, that it's a lot more personal. Maybe it's a little bit ill-advised, because what I'm sharing with you this morning, it's still very fresh and very raw, and still very much, things are still moving around and settling in my heart. But this is very much what the Lord, as I was preparing a homily for this weekend, and I wanted to preach on the gospel and the sower and the field and the wheat, and the Lord said, no, Curtis, this is what you are to share with them. So here it goes. I guess as I was driving to Springfield, Missouri last week and getting ready for this conference, I like to listen to podcasts or, you know, audiobooks, and I was listening to an audiobook, my latest field of inquiry, I guess, is ADHD, and learning more about ADHD. I was diagnosed with ADHD, I don't know, probably about 5 years ago, and to be honest, I haven't really done much with it. I'm just like, oh, okay, well, there's some letters, okay, big deal. And it's like, oh, it's there, but it's just kind of in the background. But just recently, I've got on this kick where I've started kind of researching and reading some books and trying to figure out how my mind works in that way. And this particular book was written by a lady who has a very, very severe case of ADHD, and it completely disrupts her life in some pretty severe and drastic ways. I mean, she's been kicked out of houses and lost all kinds of jobs, and it's destroyed relationships and all this stuff because she has very extreme ADHD. And then she writes, there's 10 chapters. She writes is on the 10 biggest symptoms of ADHD. So she writes the first half of each chapter, and then her husband writes the second half of each chapter, and how he has been assisting her and kind of been the guardrails to help her stay on track with her ADHD. But as I was listening to this book, driving to this conference in Missouri, I just noticed, like, and it was pretty, like I said, pretty severe stuff. I just noticed myself, like, getting choked up, listening to this woman describe this, and just, like, just feeling sorry, having compassion on this lady of, like, man, that's some rough stuff that she's gone through. But then halfway through, it kind of shifted of, like, reading myself or listening myself into this of, like, I do that too. Yes, that's me. Yes, I do that. Yes, I do that. And I transferred some of that compassion that I had for her to myself. And as I was listening and as I've kind of been researching ADHD, one of the things I've come across, and if you have it, you know exactly what I'm talking about, is that ADHD brains don't work on dopamine the same way that a non-ADHD brain does. And that's one of the reasons why, for ADHD, like, you need, a lot of times, a driving factor or force is fear to keep you, like, locked in, which is why a lot of times, like, people with ADHD will wait until the last minute to do things, which can be very frustrating for everybody else around them, but they need the fear of, like, a deadline of, I got to get this done, to lock in and get the thing accomplished. And, you know, all the way through seminary, all the way through college, like, I was always waiting to the last minute, procrastinating, like, and I just didn't realize this about myself, that I needed the fear of, like, I either get this done tonight, pull an all-nighter, write this paper, or I'm going to fail the class. And so I would, like, lock in and, you know, get the job done. But what I didn't realize is that fear, in that sense, like, it's the motivator for an ADHD brain a lot of times. But as I was kind of listening through this and hearing this, what I realized is, like, there's another part of me that kind of has developed in my mind to keep my ADHD brain on track. And it's almost like an OCD, like a like this compulsiveness of, like, making sure everything is perfect. Making sure that I remember to do things, making sure that I respond to emails and I respond to text messages and I and all those kind of things. And, like, so as I was sitting through listening to this, and I realized the Lord showed me this insight of, like, this side of me, this it's my own personal Pharisee that follows me around everywhere I go and is constantly buzzing in my ear. And the two main tools that it uses is fear and shame, constantly. And it's only within the last week and a half that this has really started becoming apparent to me, that I will motivate myself through fear or through shame pretty frequently. And this manifests itself in a lot of ways. And to the outside world, from the outside looking in, you just see, oh, Father Curtis, like, sent the email, or he showed up and did his holy hour, or he did those things. And you're like, oh, okay, he's a functioning human being doing his thing. That's the outside appearance. But from the inside, what it looks like is, if you do not do this, you are a terrible person. Right? That's the driving force behind it. And so rather than making choices or decisions in freedom, they're made in, like, almost like a compulsiveness of, like, this is the right thing, and if you don't do this, then what? Then fill in the blank. And this can be done in 1,000 different ways, but they're two very different outcomes, even if the actual event is the same. The person who says, I'm not going to eat this piece of chocolate because I want to fast today, or I just want to make a sacrifice. Or the person who says, if you eat that piece of chocolate, you're a fat slob. What's wrong with you? You see the difference? What I didn't realize is that I have this little Pharisee with me all the time. And as I'm go on my silent retreat, that's what I bring into my silent retreat. And this stuff is, like, just bubbling up, and the Lord is just kind of breaking open my heart and just kind of showing me how this all fits together. And how when you're operating out of, like, this compulsiveness or this fear, shame-based decisions, it's not actually virtue. It's not virtuous. It looks like virtue on the outside, but it's not. And on this retreat, I was reading St. John of the Cross, who's one of maybe the greatest spiritual writer in the history of the church. The spiritual mind, he was a mystic, he was an incredibly, incredibly important writer of the church. But I'm reading St. John of the Cross, and as I'm kind of working through all this stuff interiorly, I'm reading St. John of the Cross, and he's describing kind of the pitfalls of the beginner in the spiritual life. And he goes through my list. And he says, the person who is the beginner in the spiritual life, in order to keep themselves on track, they will use fear. They will use shame. In order to keep themselves on track, they frequently compare themselves to others. How do I know if I'm doing well? Well, I'm doing better than them, and I'm doing better than them, and at least I'm not doing that, so I must be doing okay. And that's exactly the prayer of the Pharisee. Remember that Jesus talks about that parable of the Pharisee who goes in, and there's the tax collector who's beating his breast. He won't even look up to God. Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. Meanwhile, the Pharisee is saying, look at me, Lord. I pay my tithe. I say my prayers. Thank God I'm not like that guy over there. I'm doing good. And the Pharisee thinks that he's justified. And there's this, the whole cycle of shame, of fear, of embarrassment, that like, I have to present myself as being perfect, having it all together, not having any faults, flaws, or weaknesses. There's not a lot of room for God in that. And as I'm reading this, and like St. John of the Cross lists all this stuff, and he says, yes, this is where the beginner is. And for what it's worth, he said, he's doubtful that anybody can advance into spiritual life without going through that phase. Everyone has to pass through that phase, according to John of the Cross, and I'd take his word for it. But as I'm reading this, the thought pops into my head, like, I've been at this for at least 20 years. Like, genuinely 2 decades where I've been very intentionally focusing on growing in my relationship with God, growing in the spiritual life, and John says, I'm the beginner. 2 weeks ago, the Pharisee would have said, see, I told you. Anybody else would have been doing this. You are lazy. You are an idiot. It would have gone off. But something different happened. I'm a beginner, okay? I realize that, I can accept that, but my prayer instead was from a different place of my heart that said, Lord, this is where I am. It just is. That's where I am. And I don't want to operate like this anymore. I don't want to make decisions or choices based in fear or shame or embarrassment. I want to make decisions in freedom because I love you. That's a different prayer than I prayed in a very, very long time. And it's a very different outcome. St. John says that beginner, his heart is full of self-love. It's a false, fake, empty self-love. And he clings to like the perception of perfection and the perception of like having it all together because that's where his security is. And he clings to that false love. And he said the only thing that can push out a false love, the only thing that can actually allow us to let go of a false love is an authentic love. Authentic love. To the degree that authentic love grows, false love shrinks. Or vice versa. And that means not just human relationship, authentic human relationship where we are seen and known in our vulnerability and our weakness, and we can expose ourselves as being non-perfect and not being condemned for it, but then also relationship with the Lord. And I know, and I think this is why the Lord has asked me to share this with you today, because I don't think I'm the only person riding in this boat. I think there are so many of us who know that there's something deeper, something more in our spiritual lives, in our relationship with God, and we keep hitting this glass ceiling, and it's like, I want to get past this, and I don't know how. And I think all of this packaged comes together, and really this is where our second reading just unlocks everything that I just said. This is from St. Paul to the Romans. Brothers and sisters, the Spirit comes to the aid of our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we ought. But the Spirit himself intercedes with inexpressible groanings. And the one who searches hearts knows what is the intention of the Spirit, because he intercedes for the holy ones according to God's will. Do you hear what St. Paul is describing? He's talking about a type of prayer that does not include words. There's no words when you get to this level of prayer. And again, I think for a lot of us in the beginning stages of prayer, it's just words, 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 blah, 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 blah. God, fix all the things and heal all the things. Words, words. St. Paul is describing a whole different kind of prayer where the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, is welcomed in, and the Spirit prays, intercedes for us with inexpressible groanings, sounds, noises, desire that is expressed to the Lord that you cannot put into words. You can't articulate. There's no song. There's no painting. There's no beauty. There's no other way to convey to the Lord other than the Holy Spirit himself. That's the type of prayer that St. Paul is talking about. We do not know how to pray as we ought. If you're like me and you were a beginner in the spiritual life, maybe the prayer ought to be, Lord, I don't know what I'm supposed to be saying. I don't know what I'm supposed to be praying. I don't know how to break through the glass ceiling. I just know that's where I want to be. And ask the Holy Spirit to pray for you. It's a whole, guys, this is a whole different, a very, very different approach than I think most of us take when we bring things to the Lord. So at least for me, for a couple of decades now. So I share this with you just as a point of reflection of, like, if you hear yourself in this, you can do something about it. And it's way less complicated than I think most of us make it. Where we think we have to be some sort of saint or we have to figure this all out. It is, and I think the secret that the saints have that you and I miss is the fact that it is so simple. And we complicate it, but the saints, it's just very simple. Lord, I don't know what I'm supposed to say. Pray for me. I give you permission to be in my heart. I want you to show me what's going on in here. And I just want to love you. I want to act in freedom. And then just let the Lord do his thing. There's an invitation, I think, that's being extended. And even just in this even in the invitation to share this with you today, the vulnerability of, like, hey, this is what's going on. This is about as raw as it gets. Like, this is the scars from the sutures and the surgery the Lord did is still super fresh in me. But I just offer this to you as hopefully a path forward where we can be moving deeper in our relationship with God and not just surface. Allow the Holy Spirit to pray in us and through us.